outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
Well, for the first time in a long time, I'm not sitting here alone talking to myself or talking to bodiless people out there on the internet. I've actually been joined by my occasional host now and then, Kyle Rice. Kyle, welcome.
Thanks, Wayne. It's great to be back.
Man, it's been a while since you and I have talked. You've been kind of running around the world. Same problem with Brad. Brad started running around the world, and then I could never find him. But you just run off into the woods or something.
It's true. I've been running out of cell phone service quite a bit this summer, which has been lovely. I've been able to get away and just enjoy some time off the grid, which is always nice. But now work is back and schools are going and back in regular cell phone service.
But you still ran off for the weekend. I mean, come on.
That's true.
You're
That's
back
true.
At work, sort of, kind of, but you've got this cottage, some family, something home up in the middle of nowhere where technology doesn't reach.
My family has two of those.
And that's a plus for the person who's there. It's a real negative for people who are trying to get a hold of you. I understand being in a completely silent internet zone. That would be awesome. I like that when I'm on an airplane. I have some space there. But anyway, it's good to have you back. Had a good summer overall?
I did. Yeah, I had a good summer overall. It had some opportunities to do some things with some guys from around the United States and got to know some more of my community here. Did a lot of house projects as COVID was locking us down. So the yard got some attention, bathroom got remodeled, and so some fun stuff.
Wow, junior craftsman, too. Huh? And the baby's growing up still?
Oh, goodness. Yes. Baby is almost 9 months old now, and she is up on her knees crawling around and is a very opinionated, very social little lady. So she is always talking, singing, or dancing in her own form. So it's awesome.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Dancing on her knees? Is that how she dances? Or she does the waist dancing?
She does the bob. She does lots of bob. And then when she's in her swing, when the music is playing, she does lots of dancing and hopping up and down and shaking her arms. So she's working on it.
So the retreat stuff is something you had on your heart for quite a while. You love taking guys into the woods and having conversations about Jesus and their spiritual journey and doing a little fly fishing. And I'm sure we'll get lots of people to sign up for this now that we're going to talk about it online. So.
No, that very much is my heart, and had an opportunity to kind of run a pilot trip this summer. Was contacted by a good friend of mine from Michigan, and he asked if I would be interested in hosting a group of guys that all had similar like minds as far as just their heart for Christ and their desire to grow in their conversation with him, but all were in desperate need of getting out of the city, out of their familiar environments, and into the wild, into nature, and just enjoying some beauty, enjoying some good conversation. So it wasn't very structured. Each day we got up and decided what we wanted to do with the day. But man, when you just create a space and let guys' hearts take a deep breath, the richness of conversation and life that can happen in that environment is just so encouraging. It's so awesome. And so we're slowly working towards that. Hopefully within the next year to 18 months, I'll be able to transition to that type of thing, that and life coaching more full time. Working with some friends and some partners out of Wisconsin that have a life coaching company that are asking me to start developing some more of that stuff. So
did you socially distance during this escapade in the mountains?
We did a pretty good job. Okay. We did a pretty good job.
No one got the COVID. No one had it coming in. So we're all good.
We were pretty good screening coming in and flew into a small airport, and we did a good job as far as staying as distanced as possible from the situation.
So. Cool. And how's the new job running?
It's good. I was initially very hesitant. There was a lot of angst this summer about whether or not it'd be a good fit, honestly. Initially, I would say that I definitely took the position more out of a space of scarcity and feeling like the quote-unquote responsible thing was to take the secure job that had the medical benefits and had the guaranteed paycheck. But honestly, from my perspective, was not in alignment with who God's created me to be or a lot of the passions that he's placed on my heart. At least the first part of it has been awesome because I'm getting to be on the front end of the conversation of how do we develop an educational environment that genuinely engages young people's hearts? And what does that look like in an alternative setting and not completely dictated by state educational standards and looking at how to provide education that specifically is tailored towards the way guys learn versus the way that the female brain learns? And what does it look like to blend that and to use project-based learning and to integrate the therapeutic model with that and strengths counseling? And it's been a lot of fun.
You're throwing a lot of jargon there, Kyle.
Sorry, that was a lot of educational jargon.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Some people who are listening to this know what you're talking about. I wouldn't be among them, but... And this is in a public school system, right?
We're piloting a day treatment school for students who have mental health issues that prevent them from functioning well in a traditional educational environment.
Oh, wow.
And so they will come and spend between 60 to 90 days with us. And then eventually the goal is to actually be able to reintegrate them back into a normal educational setting. Yeah, we'll be working with primarily junior high age students, which isn't necessarily my strength demographic. In fact, if I would have known that going into it, I don't know if I would have signed the contract. And yet there's been some really cool development even in that space as well for me.
God does that too sometimes, right? You sign up for something with him and you didn't realize all that it meant until you get in the middle of it. And then you go, and I wouldn't have signed up for this if I'd have known the whole story. I've got a few things like that in my past, but man. Well, glad you're making the best of it, even if you feel like maybe this wasn't the best decision, made more out of extremity and need than vision. But now you make the most of it, and God does too. And I love that God doesn't expect us to get everything right. He's got multiple plans and multiple ways to take our lives. And if we want to go this way, there's things he can do. And if we end up going that way, there's things he can do. It's not like he's, you didn't do what I wanted, so I'm not going to sit and pout for a year and let you suffer for making a bad decision. I love that God isn't like that, because I talked to you in the middle of that where you're feeling like, man, maybe I made the wrong decision. Should I go through with it because I committed to it? Or if my heart's in a different place, should I renege on that? And I love the kind of integrity and commitment that says, no, if this is what I said I'll do it. And then there'll be an appropriate time. God will make another exit ramp out of that into whatever else he has for you. And people who, and I've run into a lot of people like this, they can change with God every day, like the wind. So, and I understand following the Spirit and doing that, but it's horrible to try and work with somebody that can't be faithful to what they say they'll do. Even, I love when David says that. People who have a heart after God, they will even swear to their own hurt and still follow through with it instead of their word being meaningless because they want to flow with God every second. And I think if you want to flow with God every second, don't make commitments to people. That's the key. It's not, if you want to be windblown, which the John 3 thing is all about, if you want to be windblown, then don't make commitments saying, God told me to do this. And then a week later or a month later, God changed his mind, or no, I got it wrong. I'm going to go do this and leave people hanging. I love the integrity in that. I think God will honor it. I think you'll have a good year, and then we'll see what happens next year.
It's been quite the process as far as working through that and the whole heart dynamic that came up with that, honestly. I mean, you and I talked a little bit about that, and there was a bit of a grieving process, sure. Honestly. You know, there was that sense, too, where, I completely ignored some of the nudges that I felt like God was drawing me into, and yet... I agree with you. Just the joy of not being in that space where if God gave me a nudge and I didn't follow it, then that's it. I've made my bed. I've ignored him. I've made my bed. And now I've got to sleep in it and I've just got to suffer through the misery of it. And I'm very thankful that he's not that way because it,
Well, yeah. Show of hands. Has anybody not followed a nudge God gave them? I mean, that's how we learn to follow, right? And that's, you go through the Bible and you got Abraham and David and John and Peter, and you got guys whose hearts are bigger than their ability to follow, because learning to trust enough to follow is a journey. It's not something you're born with, or you got to get it right from day one. Look at Abraham. I love that it's recorded that he lied about his wife to try and get out of a dangerous situation. And he tries to have a child a different way than God said. And that creates some kinds of hassle. And I just love that God's big enough to realize, you know, teaching you to trust me enough to follow me is a process. I don't mind doing it even over the course of your whole life. I'm still learning that, you know, that there are places where you can just feel so much pressure to do something to alleviate a need and miss an opportunity that God's given you, but God circled back as he's just gracious. And in the process, we're learning to build that bridge of trust that we can cross with him, which I think is pretty cool. And we got a new, not something ready to announce yet, possibly a new book coming out of Blue Sheep Media, which you and your wife are the founders and head of.
That is very true. Are we going to dive into that
yet,
or no?
Tease it just to drive people nuts, and we'll come back to it some other point. Okay, I've had in the last couple of weeks a number of things shifting for me in the publishing world. Something, again, we're going to tease cruelly here, but that I want to talk to you guys about, because I think there's some other things that possibly need to be done at some point. So I'm kind of excited for the fresh sense of the wind of the Spirit in some things in my life, which, you know, I sometimes think, oh, I've written my best books. I'm kind of done with that. And, you know, and then things get stirred up and then say, well, maybe there's another possibility here. So I know that's cruel to talk about here, but you and I haven't talked much outside of this. So we'll get it talked about up the road. And then as we can make it available to other people, we will. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on today, Kyle, I sent you an email that I got, because there's just a whole lot in this very turbulent time, pandemic, racial inequity and unrest, and the political machine going on, spinning up toward a new election, and the RNC, DNC conventions going on. They're just a lot. I know you get it. I get it. Email from people wrestling with prophecies and conspiracy theories and what's right, what's not right. And here's what I had from Chris. He said, I know you probably get a lot of questions about prophecy. Could you do a podcast on that? I come from a Southern Baptist background, and back in the day, I lived for prophecy. That shocked me. I didn't know Southern Baptists were into prophecy. I guess I'm kind of out to lunch on that. I mean, I thought that was more of a charismatic thing than a Southern Baptist thing, but, and I don't know if he means biblical prophecy there, or people standing up on Sunday morning and giving a prophecy for God. Do you know? You seem to nod when I said Southern Baptist. Is that normal?
No, my experience anyway of Southern Baptists is not. Yeah, I was very taken aback by that as well.
So over the years, I've become very skeptical of the whole thing. Now with all that's going on in the world, it's back in my forefront. I've actually become very anxious about it. So many people believe you're on the verge of Christ's return. These pastors having dreams, people having visions, etc. I'm just really confused and anxious right now. If some are right, we're heading for perilous times this fall. I just don't see anything positive on the horizon. I guess biblically speaking, many are pointing to the Feast of Trumpets coming up next month, I believe it is. So he wants to say, hey, could you guys talk about that? And I got into this conversation with Bob Prater, my friend from Bakersfield, the other day, and I wished I'd recorded it. We had a great conversation. He and I are coming at this a little differently, kind of the same conclusions. So you've had prophetic stuff in your background, yeah? Believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Believe in God speaks to people. Yeah. They give words to stuff. And then how do you feel about a lot of stuff you're reading today? Because that's really the question. I grew up with prophetic stuff. I believe that God speaks to people. I believe that we can discern what's him, what's not him, which Paul asks us to do. Just because somebody says, thus saith the Lord, or I had this dream, that's not enough for me. I really don't. Especially when dreams are, oh, I had this dream back in November. I didn't tell anybody, but I want you to listen to it now because I had another dream in March, and now you're going to believe this one because of the one I didn't tell you about. I gotta be honest, I'm really skeptical about that stuff. If you didn't tell about the dream back then, when you didn't know it had any basis of truth to it, and it conveniently fits the circumstances that happened. Like, I've had people tell me, you know, they dreamed Donald Trump would be president, you know, like in 2009 or 8, or they had a word from God. And I'd go, did you share that with anybody at the time? Well, no, it just seems so stupid. I didn't share it. But they're just, and I find myself really skeptical of that. Not that they're lying to me, because I think they might have had a weird thought seeing a TV show and thought, hey, he'll be president someday, or, you know, whatever. It kind of, I've had a lot of those thoughts. Some of them come true, some of them don't come true. But I don't usually ascribe them to God, even if they come true, because it's just that you have a lot of whims. And when people don't share it before something happens, it's very convenient to say, oh, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. Yeah, you did, really? It's like talking about the football game on Sunday morning before it plays and talking about it on Monday morning after the game. Then now you're an expert on the game. You told me who was going to win on Sunday morning and we're wrong. But now on Monday, you know why the wrong team won. You because you saw it and it's easy to talk about it. That's how I see some of this stuff. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think I've been really struggling as well, Wayne, because I've gotten several different either links or things that people have shared with me in regards to all the prophecies that are going on and predictions about Donald Trump and predictions about the future and the coronavirus and the end times and that Jesus is coming. I mean, that's been very prevalent in my community as well, which has been surprising because I also come from a pretty conservative community. Prophecy wasn't something that I even heard about until I went to YWAM and participated in a discipleship training school in Australia in college. That was the first time that I even heard about prophecy. And I feel like there's this tension right now that has me very skeptical about prophecy because on the one side, there's the people who make these grandiose prophecies. It doesn't happen, and there's no accountability for it. It's like, yeah, I can say this big thing, this epic thing is going to happen, and I tell everybody ahead of time, and then nothing actually happens, but nobody ever says anything about it. I just move on and prophesy about the next thing.
Yeah, of the big prophecies and, you've heard like that, how many would you say came to pass?
Oh, geez.
Like a percentage.
Maybe one in 100?
Yeah, that's what I would say. And I mean, some big name stuff. I remember back in, you know, the turn of the millennium, you know, this 2000 is going to in this Y2K is going to issue an economic doomsday. One well-known author said, I will stake my entire ministry on the fact that the economic doomsday of the world will begin January 1, 2000. And it didn't. And experts were saying it wasn't going to. And it, you know, it's all that. And like you said, there's no accountability because after that, he goes right on doing what he does, even though he's going to stake his entire ministry on this fact or alleged fact. And that's what I have a hard time with, too. To me, there's not an accountability. I mean, people told us to move out of California 10 years ago and 40 years ago because of a major earthquake is going to destroy California. And an earthquake will probably come to California one day, and they have before. They will yet again. But the idea that you need to move away now and it's 10 years later and we haven't had that and you've told people God told you this was imminent, and it causes people to be jaded, doesn't it?
Yeah. And man, I think that's the hard part. And I think that's something that I'm still wrestling with because I have some friends that have sent, you know, prophecies about personal words and said, hey, would you listen to this? I'm really trying to discern this and I'm trying to discern whether or not this was an accurate word about my life. Would you mind listening to it and giving me feedback? And these are people that I've known, like these are some of my closest friends. And I really appreciate that about them and that behavior and just that desire to say, okay, does this ring true in my community's heart? Does this ring true with people that I do life with? And man, there's been times where prophecy has been so encouraging in my life. That something came, that a person gave a word over my life or over a situation that was going on, and there's no way they would have known that that was happening. They didn't know me at all. They didn't know me from Adam, and yet somehow God had given them a word of encouragement or something to share that was incredibly meaningful in that time and in that moment. And I've been able to do the same for people. But it's tough, Wayne, because I don't know how to transition from those personal words where I can really kind of process those and discern, like, is that at all in alignment with where I feel like God is moving or God's character versus these huge prophecies, these global prophecies, these prophecies over entire nations. How do you do that? How do you translate or how do you shift from the small individual personal prophecies that are fairly easy to kind of sort out and decide whether or not, does that feel true? Does that feel in alignment with what God's been saying? Or versus the big ones that are projecting that Donald Trump is going to get another term because God is using Donald Trump in this season of time. And so guaranteed Donald Trump is going to be our president for another 4 years. And so how do you navigate
and
that?
It's kind of easy. I think if you're going to prophesy, quote unquote, that you got a 50% chance of being right, right? There's only two possibilities. Yeah. So if you get it right, then, oh, man, I really, you know, put another star in my cap and I've done it. Or if you're prophesying Joe Biden's going to get it, well, then you got a 50% chance of getting that right. And, you know, maybe it's a little weighted that way right now, given the polls, but that can all change, as we know. What I look for is who's telling me this and why. And if it's garnering support for somebody, if I rarely hear those big ticket prophecies that resonate in my heart going, oh, yeah, man, this is God. This is great. I don't. In fact, I usually have this, yeah, it doesn't sound right to me. Like the guy had the dream and then the other dream, and now he's prophesying real disaster in November. You know what? Corona could explode in November and it could be a real disaster. I don't know if that's true or not. But I do know that putting that kind of prophecy out builds a name for yourself in the interim. The guy who prophesied 88 Reasons Jesus Coming in 88 made a fortune off selling that book. Jesus never came. So he did another one about Jesus going to come in 89. I was off on the math, so just a year, but wait for that. Sold another whole set of books, and then that didn't happen either. So I look at, you know, what are people getting out of this? Are they making a name for themselves? Are they trying to go viral on the internet? Are they trying to? And then I've got to have a resonance in my heart about it. And sometimes I don't. I can be neutral going, I don't know. Other things, I hear it, and it's mostly how it's being said. If there's a sense of arrogance about it, or it just feels like it's not genuine, this guy's adding external confirmations to kind of force people to believe, what, trying to make himself more spiritual than he is. I think people who really hear Jesus, like just two emails away from the one I just read to you from Chris, I got an email from someone I have known for 60 years, okay? And I haven't known, they're not that old. I've known them for 40 years, okay? Because they're younger than me. So I've known them almost all of their life. And I've had a lot of conversations with this person, and she has never, like, given me a word from the Lord. She's never. And she just says, emails, praying for you the day, and God spoke this to me, and it seemed like it was for you. So if it is, great. If it's not, maybe it was meant for my neighbor, so send it to my neighbor. Just that kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think she had more discernment than that, because I even asked her later. I said, now you kind of knew more than just maybe my neighbor, right? And she goes, yeah. But yeah. I like that people who really hear from God, because Paul says we all see through a glass darkly. So when that which is perfect, when Jesus finally comes and we see with absolute clarity, until then, none of us see what we see, bits of things. I like thinking of hearing God like looking through the fog. I think that's a tree over there. I may get closer and find out it's an elephant, but it looks like a tree. That looks like a path. It's kind of looking through the haze. And as you get closer to things, yeah, some things prove out to be true and some things prove out not to be what you thought they were. And I like the humility of someone that says, you know what, this has been on my heart. I have no idea if it's right or not, but I just want to put it out there. I have much more respect for that than the thus saith the Lord, and they're quoting God, and because they hear from God perfectly. If I catch that spirit in a prophecy, I'm pretty much rejecting it. I'm pretty much saying, yeah, I'm not taking that in.
Yeah.
If it provokes fear in my heart, that's another one I'll go, you know what? One of the things Revelation says, John, whose, you know, whole book of Revelation is this amazing prophecy for a guy that in his gospel, you don't get this sense of John the prophet, but boy, a Revelation, man, he unloads it. And when he's talking to this angelic presence, whatever, that's given him all the good stuff, at the end of it, he said to me, these are the true words of God. Then I fell at his feet to worship him. But he said to me, do not do that. I'm a fellow servant of yours and your brothers who hold the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. I have always loved that phrase. If when I hear somebody declare something they think they've heard from God, one of the first things I look for, does this magnify Jesus in my heart? Does this make Jesus bigger? Or does this make me more afraid, more performance-oriented, more, oh, I better get something right, or I'm going to get whacked over here? That's a big test for me. And it's a big test in my dialogue with other people, because I hear prophetic things, and exactly what Paul told us to do in 1 Corinthians 14. When somebody prophesies, let the others judge. Not the person who's giving the prophecy. Let the others go, that sound right? Does that not sound right? If it doesn't sound right, then put it on a shelf. If it's God, he'll make it clear down the road. I don't think we need to be afraid of that. So I look for something that invites me into bigger space with God, not something that makes me more focused on myself and my performance or lack of it. Does that make sense?
It does. And I definitely resonate with the fear one, because there's been a lot of the end time prophecies. They just don't come with a sense of joy. They don't come with a sense of rest. They don't come with a sense of hope. It's doomsday. It's, yeah, get ready. The world is coming to an end. Everything that you found comfortable, it's coming to an end. It's all over. Okay. So even if it is that going to change the way that we're called to love and live in the world? Is that going to change the way that we're to be a conduit of the kingdom to the places that we're living out our lives? I mean, how does that change? Like, if there's an earthquake that comes, or if there's an asteroid that hits the planet, like, okay, if it does, like, are we going to continue to live out of the richness and the authenticity that God's calling us into? Or are we going to move into the space of fear and angst where we start holing up in our bomb shelters, and we start storing up our food reserves, and we make sure that we have 60,000 rounds of ammo tucked away somewhere? You know, is that the response to that prophecy? And then somebody sent me this thing from Bethel. It was a teaching on prophecy. And one of the things that really, I shared it with you, is a short 6-minute video. And one of the things that just really intrigued me that I had never heard of either was this idea that there's two types of prophecy, and that one of the prophecies is like really calling things into existence. This idea that my words and my authority has the ability to make things happen in the future. What are your thoughts with that? I don't know. There was something in my yuck meter that pegged a little bit with that. And I think partially there was just this sense of like, almost like arrogance with it, I would say, but I don't know. I don't know. I want to be careful with that, because I'm just exploring it.
Yeah, I didn't watch the video. I saw you sent it to me, and I clicked on it, and I saw who it was and where it was going, and I went, and I thought it was probably a 35-minute teaching. I didn't even look to see, or an hour and a half teaching. I didn't even look to see it was only 6 minutes, or I would have stayed with it. But for me, that kind of stuff, everything I love in Jesus that's real, like what this lady sent to me, really, I was reading it, and there's just tears in my heart. There's resonance in my soul about, man, there's something really, and I don't understand it all yet. There's things in there that I'm going, okay, I don't get it, and it's not appealing to the fleshy part of me, because there's some really nice words in there, but I'm going, okay, yeah, I don't know if I want that. And I always say that how I know something's from God is usually, yeah, I'd rather it not be true, because, you know. If I wanted to be true, I'd already be doing it. But God's ideas are always better than my ideas, but they're also shocking to my ideas. So it takes me a while to process. But to me, everything that gets on a stage, and this is weird, but it gets a little distorted. Friends among friends saying, hey, yeah, God put something on my heart, maybe for you. Can I share it with you? And we can talk about it and see it. That to me is very real. Somebody gets on a stage and talks about, you know, this prophetic of declaring things into being, and I've watched that stuff all my life and never seen it work. I see the reality of God speaking to people and us giving encouraging words to each other. And then when you put it on a platform with somebody who's selling their time and getting honorariums and charging incredible amounts of money for their classes, I always go, okay, yeah, see, I don't trust that. I just don't. And then when you talk about the arrogance of the attitude, and this is where this is what amazes me about Christianity in this day. Most Christians have a well set arrogance meter. Just somebody get on a stage and tell you how humble they are, and they'll believe it. When I see arrogance, when I see somebody just, you know, they're closer to God than you are, and they've got this together in their life, and they're telling you what you should do, I just go, you know what? I don't trust that, because to me, that's not the heart of the Jesus people I know around the world. The Jesus people I know, the closer they get to him, they grow in this sense of humility and this willingness to be wrong and not having to prop up their ministry with some kind of false accolade or some kind of branding need to be this kind of prophet or that kind of evangelist or apostle or whatever. And so I always want people, and this is what I didn't do well as a pastor, I'll be honest, but I want you to trust your yuck meter. Even if something coming from me, if it hits you with, gosh, that just sounds arrogant, that sounds, then trust that until God shows you differently. You know, explore it, grow in it, ask questions, you know, kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
But also don't just take it in, because I think prophecy, whether it's personal or even the big stuff, ought to be a confirmation, not something new I've got to somehow adjust my life to. If Jesus were coming in October, I don't know if there's any advantage in telling us that he is, particularly when scripture talks about who are those that God's going to find as his when he comes, the people that are just occupying, they're doing what they were doing every other day. It wasn't people that were kind of, oh, he's coming next week, so I better escalate my prayer time, evangelism time. You know, if that's what you need to motivate you, you're probably not already deeply into this kingdom. Because the servants that God honors, Jesus talks about when he comes back, are those that are already doing the things he's called them to do. They're already leaning into that life. So they didn't need a, boy, it's going to happen in October, so I'm going to get all my ducks in a row and make decisions. And I know people, this was a feast of something, tabernacles or something, a number of years ago, the new moons, everything aligned, Jesus was coming then. I know people who left their jobs, who did all kinds of things because they wanted to be ready. And then it passes, and they've made economic decisions now that to their destruction, because they believed something, and I mean completely convinced it was going to be true, and made business decisions based on that, and were wrong. And now you've got a real mess on your hands. And I think a real accountability for those people that are saying, thus saith the Lord, and then embellish it with, you know, I had an angel sit on my bed and notarize it on my wall so I know I'm right. I think those people have a real accountability for that kind of stuff. And it may get you clicks. It may make you popular up until your prophecy fails. And then you got to come up with a new one. You got to keep throwing one out there so people go, okay, it was almost right. Or even I go back to the Trump thing and saying, you know, the prophecy that he's going to be reelected. If he's not, then what those people often say is, that's what God wanted, but because of the unfaithfulness of people not to vote the right way. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The so they've always people, got an out. Yeah. That's what I hate about religious answers. They always have a way out. They can say, well, God's going to do this. And then if it doesn't, it's your fault. You didn't do enough. It's just like exercise. You join the gym and, you know, but if you don't lose weight, it's because you didn't go. And you didn't work hard enough, and you didn't arrange your eating. So you're not only paying for it, you get blamed for it at the end for if it doesn't work. And to me, that's the disgusting nature of religion. But it's interesting that you're saying it too. During this pandemic, racial unrest, hang in the balance kind of election, this stuff is just multiplying. There's prophecy coming. I mean, I have dreams every night, and some of them are whacked out weird. But I know they're not God when I get up. Others, I do know they're God when I wake up. I'll go, man, there's something God's saying to me in that. I know the difference, but not every dream we have about even the future, because sometimes they're just plain nightmares. They're not God saying anything. But I was reading an article in Relevant Magazine. I thought this was interesting. That title of the article is, Why Do So Many Christians Believe in Conspiracy Theories? So it's not really about prophecy, but this has been the QAnon has become a big deal, and Christians buying into, you know, this powerful elite behind every decision made in the world. And the false flag operations of unrest and terrorist activity is to keep people away from who's really making the power. It's all faked up stuff. So, and people who get into this, and I've got a few of my email senders who send me that, really convinced that this Illuminati thing, which I've heard about since the 60s, you know, is really the Rothschilds and all these people controlling their... I was going, oh my gosh, I don't see how you can have a real involvement in the world and think that's true. Maybe if you're staying on your farm in Wyoming or Texas or Arizona or something.
Hey now.
Maybe you just go, okay, I don't know it. So this stuff really seems likely. What this guy was saying out of this article, and this is Dr. Daniel Jolly, who's a scholar in psychology of conspiracy theories, which is an interesting study.
Okay.
He says, to truly understand why people believe these ideas in the first place, you have to understand human psychology. What his team has found is that at the core of these behaviors and tendencies is something very simple, a need to feel like you're in control. And I think the same thing is true of prophecies. Prophecies to me is kind of like Sunday morning before the football game talk. And how certain, when you listen to those guys and gals talk about the game coming, who's going to be the better quarterback? Who's going to win? And the game turns out to be a blowout the other way from all their certainty. And prophecy is kind of like that. We're prophesying our own desires. We want this to happen. And so we're prophesying our hopes. And maybe whatever video you were listening to, some guys think, well, just the very act of prophecy can call something into being. What's behind that? The need to control. If we prophesy, if we believe, if we pray hard enough, this thing will happen. We're trying to grab control. Conspiracy theories, as this guy's saying, is kind of the Monday morning thing. We look back going, okay, this is why that team lost. They came in the game and their heads weren't in it and they didn't care about it. The other team wanted it more than they wanted it. And if you talk to the team, they're going, no, they didn't. We won, but we had two key injuries here that took us out of our game, whatever. The conspiracy theories and prophecies are both attempts to bring order and control because we feel the risk or the vulnerability of uncertainty. And I think, boy, this really, when I read this, I'm going, okay, that's why in this time of tension and uncertainty, prophecy and conspiracies both abound. And that's not to say prophecy isn't real and God doesn't really do prophecies. Yeah. And there probably are some people involved in some conspiracy things, but not the ones I read about. Not these outlandish pedophile rings run out of pizza parlors that, you know, people have really believe in and believe that our world is evil enough to cover that all up and enough conspirators can be involved in that. That to me is crazy. But the fact that people want to be in control of circumstance or at least want to know that God is, and they don't really believe that he is. Yeah. Because they see things happen they can't explain. And this need, the article goes into our need to make sense of what doesn't make sense. The coronavirus doesn't make sense. How we fix racial injustice in America doesn't make sense. So instead, we're going to look for the black speaker who's telling us there needs to just be harder working people in black neighborhoods and then we'll all be better. And if you're a white person, you love that because that's what you want to see, right? And you miss the fact that, no, there's real injustice going on. There's people being killed. And there's a group of people saying, we're not going to take this anymore. You're going to find justice for us because it's not, you can't live in peace if we can't live in peace. And that's scary stuff. But we've said often on the God Journey, if you can't live secure in uncertainty because of God's love for you, you're on the wrong journey. The certainty doesn't come in controlling outcomes. Whether it's through prayer or prophecy or trying to explain things away with conspiracy, if you can't live secure in a Father's love for you, regardless of what happens next, if I get COVID, if I die from it, if the wrong person becomes president in somebody's point of view, if I get sick, if I lose my job, if your security in the Father's love is not big enough for that, then you will grasp at false things that will not be secure forever, but they'll give you 3 months of it. And then you look for something else to give you 3 more months of it because you're finding security in something other than him. And I know for me, I couldn't have done much of what I've done in the last 20 years if my security hadn't been in, okay, this is a big risk. It could come out very painful, but I think you want me to do it. So I'm in. And I'm willing to pay the consequence of being wrong, or I'm even willing to pay the consequence of it not being perfect.
Yeah.
To help someone who's not going to be helpful back. You know, that's all part of loving because you're not worried about them watching your back. You're letting God watch it.
I guess having been in one of those learning moments of trusting God this summer specifically, I completely agree with what you just got done saying. And yet it's also tough. Like as somebody who's younger in this journey and who sometimes can allow or I mean, who can honestly get caught up still in the fear and the pressures that the world puts on around me, you know, or tries to overwhelm me with. And that, you know, I've seen God do some amazing things in my life and in the short time that I've been here in this world. And yet And yet the summer was a perfect example of getting completely derailed in a lot of regards, yeah. out of this fear, out of the sense of responsibility, out of the, you know, and honestly, a scarcity mentality. And God's still coaxing me out of that. He's still drawing me into that understanding, that deeper understanding that, no, you can actually trust me here, Kyle. And you've seen it before, but we're going to keep taking you to that, to a deeper level in that.
Which is, that's how we all learn. I mean, I think that's the beauty of it. How do we grow comfortable in uncertainty is that you've been through some really horrible outcomes and God was bigger than the outcome. And because he wins in that, in your heart, he doesn't always get the circumstance you want. And if you're not growing in that security, and I think this summer is a great way to learn that, because that's how I've learned. I've gone, you know, I think I missed something there and I don't want to miss it again. And so your heart expands to let God do what else God wants to do. And then another circumstance will come and same thing. And I love that. I just think what I want to scream at people is don't grab for false security and don't grab for fear, because God's got this whole scary thing going on and you don't know. And so now you got to figure it out or you're going to be lost. You're safe in him. And whatever he wants you to do, Jesus said about the prophecy he gave his disciples, like, I'm telling these things, not so you'll know what's going to come, but so that you'll believe when it happens. That's really the key, right? It's not, we've got it all figured out. I mean, I grew up on Hal Lindsey's stuff. My gosh, he couldn't have been more wrong about all those books that sold best-selling stuff. He couldn't have been more wrong about how he interpreted future events. So I don't trust preacher guys who sell in books to tell me they've got it all figured out, when what God's really inviting us to is to be secure in him when we don't have it figured out.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to get sucked into conspiracy theories or false prophecies. That's what Israel always had. A lot of false prophets would tell them what they wanted to hear. And that's fine. God's going to deliver you from Babylon. So, oh yeah, we're partying every day. And then Babylon comes and he delivers us to Babylon. You go, okay, well now that wasn't such a great prophet. But I got 3 months of joy out of it. And I guess for some people, 3 months of joy is worth it. Or 4 months of fear is, I don't know, it kind of makes them feel like they've been more motivated to God. I don't know. Prophecy is a real thing. It's a lovely thing when it's real. I think it works better, more person to person. This stuff works best on the street, not on a stage and not on a video.
During the time of the prophets, when these prophets are making these big prophecies and like, how would I have responded? You know, what, have I listened and followed the prophets, or have I been like, dude, that guy is off his nut. He's on a stage. Like, there's no way that's happening.
Except these guys weren't usually on the stage. The false prophets had the stage. No, these guys were usually in a dungeon cell somewhere. Yeah.
Or the exile that was on the outskirts of the city.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.